Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I certainly hope we're on air. That would be three nights in a row. What a freaking bonus. Yeah. This is The Horn. It is the ninth day. Sorry, I'm a little addled. It's the ninth day of March 2017. Sorry if I threw y'all for a loop, too. My sincere apologies. It really is the ninth day of March 2017. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. And I was a few minutes late getting to air because right at just a few minutes, I know, I should have just left it be, but I'm a cheap bastard. And right as I was about to throw the third switch, what did I find? But lo and behold, the Frontier Connection was back. And so I began furiously and desperately trying to see if we could stream out with that so I could get the rerun stream back up and running. Yeah. In the meantime, I also discovered that for reasons known but to God, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, whomever, mostly, I don't know. We'll just... Flying Spaghetti Monster, I can't get in the chat room. I don't know if it's self, I don't know if Java self-updated or something, or exactly what happened, but I can't get in the chat room. This chat requires Java. Get Java now. Yeah, I had Java, but now apparently I don't have Java. That or the update went through that prevents people from, you know. Because if you take the latest Java update, you're screwed. And I have studiously avoided doing that for quite some time now, since Sparky warned me against it. I don't know who's in the chat room for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, but I can guarantee you that if you go to headonradionetwork.com, and if you can, if Java will cooperate with you, and that's an open question, then pick yourself out a screen name and password and be welcomed by the whole merry band that is the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Steve from Georgistan, I could try IE11, but it would probably take me the next 3 hours of the program to load it. It might be worth remembering that this is a one-person operation. Sparky telling me it was a Firefox update and not Java. Bastards! Okay. How's about that? Well, I don't know if I'm running... I don't know what Internet Explorer version I'm running. Probably some virus-laden nightmare. But, you know. Let's try this, just for fun. Let's turn the caps off first. Working. We'll see. Sort of takes some of the starch out of the opening of the program. I was all rip snorting ready for bear and all of that, but are we? Is it gonna? I don't know. Okay, let's find out. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Let's find out. One, two, crunch, three. And I'm there! Well, yay. So if you jump in there, if you're a first-timer or whatever, you will be greeted by Anatole and Labor Man, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgia Stand, VT Blom, Jug-a-Punch, and, of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Okay, so, yay. Apparently, whatever Internet Explorer this is actually running Java, and we'll call that an early victory. So, I'm very thankful and very proud to announce that thanks to your response last night to Chris's We Love Shirley challenge, we caught up with everything that we missed out last week, on Monday. So all we've got is the regular fundraising goal this evening, $200. And because I announced it late in the program, I'm going to carry over Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge this evening. So that, you might recall, he put a $50 challenge on the table. Well, that'll work out nicely this evening, because if that $50 challenge is met, that'll mean we have met, in our own right, half of the fundraising for the evening. And that'll leave us just $100 to go. And in good shape for going into Friday on the front porch. So, can we do that? You know, of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And you might also be interested to know, because one of these days, we're going to get all the way to 100 subscribers, but we can use everyone we can get. One of these days, we will, though. One of these days, we'll get to 400, just like Joan in Taliban, Deanna has been urging. But if you want to check that little box and just put $10 in, and that way it'll just $10 a month, it's $120 a year. Works out to about 15 cents an hour of programming. And there aren't just a hell of a lot of 15 cent an hour programs out there. Especially when you consider the number of programs out there that exhort you to buy gold now or buy vacuum cleaners that pick up Swedish bowling balls and drop them on mattresses with foam developed by NASA while you listen to your Bose Wave radio in your General Steel building on your crappy lumber liquidator's floor that was probably sourced from some exploited rainforest in South Asia. Right? And, yes, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, hey, remind people they can get more than one subscription. I've got five. So, here's, yeah, and this is one of those times of the month. There's only, I think, two, maybe three subscribers today. There were two yesterday. And so, and you know, I'll be honest, we've lost some. I suspect we've lost some because I refuse to bow down to the Sparkle Fart powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. And that's okay, because all I can do is sit here and speak my mind. And if you want to go away, I'm not going to fight with you. No. So there you have it. If you prefer the United States mail, you can also participate that way, as many people do, or some people do. Bossman Wayne sometimes goes to the mailbox and finds an echo chamber. Sometimes he puts away the spider-proof gloves and actually pulls envelopes out of the mailbox. The mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, I never see him, is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okay? Okay, so that's all out of the way. It's 17 minutes past the hour, and like I said, I was about 5 minutes late getting started. But I think this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, and Thorn in the Side Thursday being a day that we dedicate to those moments of right wing thought, I thought it might be instructive to check out a little bit of audio from last night's marathon session in which the Republicans in the House of Representatives aimed a loaded gun at the head of some several millions of Americans, pulled back the hammer, and squeezed the trigger. Because, see, I maintain that that's what this healthcare business is. This is an attempt, a deliberate attempt, to kill people. Now, if some bad dude was pointing a gun at you, and you happen to have some means of defending yourself, the NRA will happily tell you that you have a perfect right under not just American law or state law, but oldie, merry oldie English common law to defend yourself against that threat to your continued existence. If somebody's got a gun pointed at your head and you can quietly slip a shiv between his ribs, pop a lung, pierce his heart, whatever, and, you know, kill him freaking dead to eliminate the threat to your life, the law will not punish you. It might try you, but it will not punish you for trying to save your own life against someone who is trying to kill you. Unfortunately, you do not have that right against the Republicans in Congress. For when they go after anywhere between 6 and 38 million Americans who will die because of what they are deliberately and intentionally doing, you have no remedy except voting. And that's not to say that voting is not effective. So we'll just have to, but you're going to have to wait a while to do that voting. And before we get to the shenanigans, I've got a note from Mike in Cascadia, a note of some import that might be beneficial to you. I got this just a little bit before airtime this evening. Mike in Cascadia writing, Bob, there are two Democratic candidates that all progressives, liberals, and Democrats should support. One, Catherine Allen has raised over $100,000 in the last 12 hours. Not being Jason Chaffetz makes her worthy. She is going to be the Democratic challenger to Jason Chaffetz in the Utah general election for that particular House district in November 2018. She is worth supporting because, like I said last night, talking to Scott in San Diego and Punky, you have to have a couple of high-value targets. And Jason Chaffetz would be one. And he is an evil freak. Any guy who thinks that you can afford health care if you just don't buy an iPhone is disconnected from reality at a level that we have really not seen since George H.W. Bush didn't understand the barcode scanner back in, what, 1990? He needs to go into his well-funded retirement in and who knows, maybe get some political donors to keep paying his cell phone bill. The other candidate that Mike in Cascadia points out is worthy is Rob Quist in Montana, running against a carpetbagger billionaire named Greg Gianforte. Mike says, my parents in Montana know Quist. He's a musician, and he travels around Montana playing the banjo and bluegrass. He has a lot of name recognition there in the state. And the election is in May. Mike adds, the Republicans in snit condition alpha are in a fight with each other, since some want a mail-in ballot, while others want to limit democracy and spend more with a less inclusive vote. Montana Cowgirl writes a good blog on the issue. You can find it at mtcowgirl.com. And go have a look, maybe. Meanwhile, under the headline, the U.S. Congress needs a caring physician, because, frankly, the U.S. Congress is chock-a-block with good God-fearing right-wing, upstanding, evangelical, Christ-centered, Bible-believing, amosexual, fundamentalist doctors who don't give a flying rat's ass about people in general and care only about their own pocketbooks. Under the heading, the U.S. Congress needs a caring physician, candidate for Utah 3rd Congressional District primary in 2018. Yes. Catherine Allen. So, she and Rob Quist in Montana, and Rob Quist has the more immediate election, because his election comes around in May. Take a look, pay attention. Why? Because of what I'm about to share with you. The Republicans ran something like an 18-hour session in multiple different committees, cramming the We Want to Kill Millions of Americans bill through the Congress willy-nilly, helter-skelter, and regardless of the impact of it. It was not always pleasant. It was frequently unpleasant. Including this particular incredulous exchange between a coal-fired Republican from Illinois named John Shimkus. He's a nasty one. Come on, they all are. Did I do Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid? Okay, Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And from Pennsylvania, Representative Mike Doyle, a Democrat. I don't know what Mike Doyle did in the previous general election, and frankly, I don't care. So I'm not going to countenance any screaming of neoliberal or any of that silly shit. He and Shimkus engaged in a, and yes, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and sometimes Thorn in the Side Thursday does occasion the necessity of a hockey puck. This is one of those moments. Bite down real hard, take a couple of loops around your head with the fancy camo Gorilla Glue duct tape, because you're going to need it. Because, see, in this particular portion of the committee meeting, the Republicans were prattling on and on and on, as they have for 7 years, about that godforsaken mandate that steals all our liberty and freedom when people can go to the doctor when they're sick and it keeps them from being free and dying. Well, Mike Doyle had had enough. And he made inquiry of Representing Shimkus. And if you've got a good bite of the hockey puck now, you're ready for this.
I'd just like to say to our friend from Oklahoma, none of us think this bill is perfect. I've never heard a single Democrat say that this bill was perfect. We knew that it needed work. And we wanted for the last 7 years to work with Republicans to try to improve this bill. You guys weren't very interested in that. I'm not sure what the gentleman is talking about when he talks about mandates. What mandate in the Obamacare bill does he take issue with? Certainly not with pre-existing conditions or caps on benefits or letting your child stay on the policy to 26. So I'm curious, what is it we're mandating?
Would the gentleman yield?
Yeah, sure.
What about men having to purchase prenatal care? Is that not correct?
Reclaiming my time.
Should they?
Reclaiming my time.
Whoa.
There's no such thing as a la carte.
Regular order.
There's no such thing as a la carte insurance, John. You don't get the.
That's the point. That's
say,
the point.
That.
We want the consumer to be able to go to the insurance market and be able to negotiate on a plan.
Reclaiming my time. Me what insurance company will do that. There isn't a single insurance company in the world
the
that does that, John.
Time,
I think it's safe to say that there is a significant amount of flummoxation going on there. Oi. John Shimkus of Illinois, I guess maybe playing to the, because they're a part of the hard right-wing coalition of neo-Nazis, Klansmen, bigots, xenophobes, homophobes, transphobes, misogynists, etc., who put Trump in power. I guess he's playing to the men's rights movement guys.
Well, what about men having to pay for prenatal insurance?
Well, I'm almost rendered as speechless as Representative Doyle was. Let's assume, and not as a norm, okay, I don't want to put anybody off. Let's assume that you've got a couple, and one half of the couple is pregnant. And let's say for a minute that she relies on coverage that her partner gets through her employment. And since this was the paradigm with which John Shimkus was working, we're going to assume that her partner, her spouse, who has employment through work, is a guy, you know, a man. What about men having to pay for prenatal care? Well, okay. So, in the name of freedom and liberty, sit. John Shimkus wants the guy to be able to negotiate his own policy by checking off boxes like a meal at a Chinese restaurant. One from column A, two from column B. What?
What's the point? We want people to be able to negotiate.
Yeah, because you know what? When you go up against United Health or Aetna or any of these other assholes, lonely little you, you're going to have some serious negotiating powers. Let's see. I get the concept. Really, I do. Long have I yearned for a cable television package that would allow me to uncheck the boxes by all the electric Jesus and all the electro shopping and all the Time Life hits of your lifetime channels. I get that. But this ain't cable. This is life or death. And so I guess John Shimkus was speaking up for the dickhead dads of the world who don't want to pay for prenatal care for mommy-to-be? Goddamn folic acid. She wants everything, you know that? Folic acid. Sitting there wanting to honk away on the folic acid just so that so the baby won't be born with an open spine. Huh. Shit. I mean, that's the cost of that car. That's two or three trips to the beer joint.
I mean, damn. Ain't men got no rights no more? And, you know, Carol Baker points out, isn't the guy the one who got her pregnant?
No, that was Jesus. Jesus reached down with his divine digit and shoved that little sperm into that little egg, and that's how they make babies. So, I mean, this is the spastic gymnastics the Republican Party is willing to go through in order to take health care away from people and give a monumental tax break to the wealth class that, well, you know, to be fair, by God, sent them there to do precisely that. And there are questions that still have to be answered. Like, what happens to black lung benefits? Questions like, what happens to mental health benefits? Wait a minute. Okay, so it turns out there is not a question about what happens to mental health benefits. Who knew? No. That question, boys and girls, has been answered. Also, during the marathon epic session in which the House of Representatives flushed this bill through committee like a prune juice and milk of magnesia cocktail, there was a... There was an exchange. There were some remarks by Joe Kennedy III. Yeah, those Kennedys. And it came as Paul Ryan referred to so aptly by Charlie Pierce as the zombie-eyed Granny Starver from Wisconsin. Paul Ryan said that this bill is an act of mercy. Now, may I remind you that Paul Ryan is a Roman Catholic. Paul Ryan ostensibly worships a brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who never charged anybody for health care, healed the sick, gave sight to the blind, made the lame to walk, cured an issue of blood in a woman. And never charged a not so much as one red shekel for it. And because the mantra of the right wing is that Obamacare is a disaster and Obamacare is dying, well, if it's dying, it is dying the death of 1,000 cuts, and those cuts were created by knives wielded by those self-same Republicans trying to quietly defund it so as to make it fail. Well, Paul Ryan said that it was a matter of mercy to pass this bill that's going to mercifully kill anywhere between 6 and 38 million American citizens. This got under the skin of Joseph Kennedy III. He remarked the following. I was struck last night by a comment that I heard made by Speaker Ryan where he called this repeal bill an act of mercy. May I also note, for those who don't necessarily know or, you know, aren't paying attention to religion or whatever, the Kennedy family is rather famously Roman Catholic, too. I would submit that their understanding of the message of Christ Jesus, such as it was, their understanding is probably somewhat considerably better than that of a guy whose daddy died on him when he was a teenager and then used Social Security disability, Social Security survivor benefits to finish high school and go all the way through college, you know, on our dime. Anyway, Joseph Kennedy III said, I was struck last night by a comment that I heard made by Speaker Ryan, where he called this repeal bill an act of mercy. With all due respect to our speaker, he and I must have read different scripture. Ouch. Well, of course, Paul Ryan was reading the annotated Conserva Testament as prepared by Ayn Rand. And let's do remember, I don't know, he's probably still doing it, Paul Ryan made a point of giving out copies of Atlas Shrugged with some of the seediest, seamiest sex scenes ever committed to print contained within it to his 16-year-old incoming congressional office interns. Nice guy. What a nice guy. With all due respect to our speaker, he and I must have read different scripture. The one I read calls on us to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to shelter the homeless, and to comfort the sick. It reminds us that we are judged not by how we treat the powerful, but how we care for the least among us. There's that Matthew 25 problem the Republicans keep having. There is no mercy in a system that makes health care a luxury. There is no mercy in a country that turns their back on those most in need of protection, the elderly, the poor, the sick, and the suffering. There is no mercy in a cold shoulder to the mentally ill. This is not an act of mercy. It is an act of malice. Malice. Strong words. Yeah. It is an act of malice. And it is. That's the only way you can describe what these Republicans are doing to people who have no way to defend themselves. If you've got somebody strapped to a chair, unable to move their hands, unable to move their feet, their mouths taped shut, and you proceed to just start beating the living hell out of them, that is malicious, and no, they have no means of defending themselves. And that is the poor in America right now. That is everybody who needs health care in America right now who is not monumentally wealthy. We are, each and every one of us, strapped to a chair, our hands tied, our legs tied, our mouths covered in tape, as the Republican Party led by Paul Ryan comes up with gloved fists holding rolls of nickels and proceeds to impart upon us their mercy. I know, some mercy. And it is galling to me that we can't do anything about it save vote. But that's where we are, isn't it? Kind of stuck. As they draw nearer to us with those gloved fists clutching rolls of nickels. And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't terrifying, because I have my own reason to be terrified. Lots of us do. Over in the chat room, our dear friend Barkway sent me a note a couple of nights ago asking for the best and fondest thoughts for her husband, as he has been told his pancreatic cancer has returned. And he has been much on my mind. And I hope for him the greatest strength in that struggle. And I know I speak for the entire Horn Family Community Congregation when I say that. Anybody who doesn't have insurance, people who work like the devil and manage to make less than 137% of the poverty rate are qualified for the Medicaid expansion, unless you live in one of those malicious states like Missouri or Alabama or Mississippi Stan or South Carolina Stan, or you get the idea. Where the idea of letting the working poor go to the doctor when they're sick is some sort of anathematic offense to the idea of Southern chivalry. But that exchange came, I'll note, that exchange came also as Representative Joe Kennedy III asked some substantive questions. Particularly, Representative Kennedy asked a staffer, a lawyer, in regard to mental health and substance abuse coverage, which is presently critically necessary to some 1.3 million Americans on Medicaid and is covered by Medicaid, Representative Kennedy simply asked the lawyer staffer, is that gone in the Republican bill? He said, are those benefits no longer essentially covered or required to be covered by this version of this text? Is that not correct? And the lawyer, in lawyerly fashion, replied,
The text before us does remove the application of the essential health benefits for the alternative benefit plans in Medicaid. Weasel speak. Yes, Congressman. Yes. Joe Kennedy replied, including mental health? Yes.
Now, this matters, even in states that do have the Medicaid expansion, or perhaps especially in states that have the Medicaid expansion. Especially if one of those states that has the Medicaid expansion is absolutely burned up and fried to a crisp with opioid addiction. You know, West Virginia, where I am. Where we are losing an entire generation because we have an attorney general who was the lawyer and whose wife was a lobbyist for drug wholesalers who poured so many opioids into the state of West Virginia that there was enough for 403 pills for every man, woman, and child in this state. Speaking to the Washington Post, Congressman Kennedy said, it's potentially devastating. You're going to have over 1 million people, many of whom are struggling with an opioid epidemic that's wreaking havoc on our streets across the country, ripping these benefits at a time when they need them the most. And that is what he meant when he said that what the Republicans are doing and what they are feverishly ramming through the House, regardless of the objections of humane individuals, you know, the Democrats, or regardless of the objections of the subhuman monsters, the Freedom Caucus, who think that that if you can go to the doctor when you're sick and you haven't paid, you know, $50,000 for the privilege, that you're somehow devoid of liberty, and freedom.
Freedom!
They're just doing it. Because they're so close, they can taste it. They're sick and damn tired of hearing about how that black man gave health care coverage to all those poor white folks. It's disgusting. And the very nature of our republic hangs by a thread in the balance. Because, see, the American people do not want to have their health care taken away. And in the history of Congress, there's not a whole lot of examples of rights that have been given to the people being taken back by the Congress. This has been a long, long war. These malicious pricks started in the courts. And they sued, and they sued, and they sued, and they sued. John Roberts and his court upheld the Affordable Care Act as a function of the Congress's ability to tax. But as we have discussed in the past, since he is probably the single most evil genius in the entire Republican Party, John Roberts struck down the idea of making every state take the Medicaid expansion and instead told the Confederacy that, no, by God, you do not have to let those poor people and, you know, the wrong coloreds have access to health insurance because freedom. He actually, the court actually told states that, no, they did not have to take great big whopping wheelbarrowfuls of free money. So that's one thing we know is out. Mental health care. Substance abuse treatment. And that really does matter in a place like West Virginia. And I mean, that's just my point of reference. It matters other places too. Because even with what money we have, we still don't have enough money to fund all the beds we need for substance abuse treatment, for people to be able to go inpatient and at least try to get free of the Jones. You know, a more paranoid man might look at the whole situation and just imagine some CEO at a drug wholesaling company like, say, Cardinal, saying, "Well, you gave America a black president. We're going to give you a monkey for your back." Cost of the U.S. healthcare system on an annual basis estimated at $78.5 billion per year out of the opioid abuse and addiction and dependence and overdose epidemic. Does Paul Ryan give a flying runny shit? No. He just wants to make sure that he can enact some twisted version of libertarian free market liberty, freedom. Steve in New York writes, "As I listen to this tool talking about John Shimkus a little bit ago, I find myself truly tired. As much as my still idealistic notion that we can really reason with people who disagree with us, remarks like this make me want to just give up and really just work to find other people who aren't lost causes. There are two choices here. This person really doesn't understand the purpose of insurance and how it works, or he is feigning profound ignorance. In either case, this person has no business being anywhere near any legislative body. How can this be? This is flat sociopathic to act this way, or profoundly, profoundly ignorant." Well, seeing as how John Shimkus is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the coal industry, among others, Steve, I'm guessing that he's only saying what he has been paid to say. But in regard to Joseph Kennedy's words, Steve said, "I'm sorry, but I'm going to be turning in my sycophant ID card. Calling this an act of malice is way off. I'm sorry, but that's a bullshit weasel word. If he and the Democrats had any kind of spine, they'd call it what it is, an act of terrorism." It is that. But remember, Steve, there are rules in the House. Remember, you have to refer to somebody whose guts you goddamn hate as my friend in the House. It goes back to an early effort to try to keep members of the House from cudgeling each other to death. Now, we can have a debate on whether or not it might be better to get rid of that rule and let them duke it out. Brother Deacon Asa up in far Canada, where they've got that communist healthcare system where people lay on floors dying, waiting for heart bypass operations and
and boob jobs and stuff. Asa said, Paul Ryan never finished that sentence. What the sumbitch really meant to say was, repealing the ACA is an act of mercy killing. Yeah, it's kind of like the dog food I was talking about the other night, and I mispronounced the name. Darlene reminded me, because if I misled anybody and you want to protect your fur baby, I've never seen the stuff around here, but the name of the dog food is Evanger. I was pronouncing it Evanger. I guess I was having a momentary lapse of, or a momentary fit of Norwegianism or something, because there's a place in Norway called Stavanger, I don't know. But Darlene said she was having a hard time understanding, but that I was mispronouncing it, and corrected it. So yes, it is Evanger. And in point of fact, in regard to that stuff, Darlene noted, if, you know, the email will ever open, there it is. I used to feed my Alfie a Shih Tzu, Evanger's chicken supplement, for years and he did horribly on it. And I'd find foreign objects in it, flies, things like that. Thank goodness I stopped giving him that crap. Now he gets nice grown-up, ground-up chicken I cook up along with rice and a vitamin to cover all nutrition bases. Thanks for the PSA on the dog food. Well, I bring that up because there's a certain similarity. Because that act of, remember, the Evanger's dog food was recalled because inside the dog food were actually also included a drug that's used to euthanize animals. Well, it's the same thing with this American Health Care Act, or Affordable Health Care Act, or Awesome Health Care Act, or Asshat Health Care Act, or whatever it's called, because it's got death inside it, just like the dog food does. Ace is right. An act of mercy, killing. And we can't do a damned thing about it. You know, except for elections, which are supposed to work. And I want to backtrack a little bit on what I've been saying about the Senate. I've been saying that there is absolutely no chance that the Senate could turn to Democratic hands. Well, any odds maker worth his salt, and any bookie would say, well, hell no, you're wrong, Bob. Because you always need somebody to take that long shot bet. That's how they make their money. By 2018, who knows? Working on Scott and Punky's irrepressible optimism. Maybe people in Alabama will ditch Luther Strange for whatever never been heard of before Democratic Senate candidate gets put forward for ritual slaughter. Maybe the same thing will happen in Mississippi. Maybe the same thing in Tennessee. Maybe. I mean, I guess the odds are better just based on population dynamics and statistics that there might be a viable Democrat somewhere in Texas who could take down Lion Ted Cruz.
I'm sorry. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the guy who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Yeah, that guy. Because if you could take down 5 out of 9 and keep, including Joe Manchin, every Democratic and independent seat, why, you could have a majority of one. It could happen. Monkeys could also fly out my butt, but it could happen. Couple more notes. Tara says, no, Scott, if GOP care fails, orange privilege will blame Democrats, which is the exact headline of this story from CNN. Trump to conservative leaders, if this plan fails, I'll blame Democrats. And the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers and the mouth walkers and the knuckle breathers and it will go, yeah, sure enough, some damn commie Democrats out there keeping America from being great again. Come on, y'all. Let's go to the cross burning. Tara says, yeah, knuckle draggers will agree with their king. The resolution? Civil war. Jesus, that's a terrifying thought. David from South Carolina, Stan, says, healthcare freedom. Just what one needs at 75 years old. More choices of insurance plans. Thousands of choices as one's mind is on the decline. Really? Yes, really. But their choices, David, the way I've got a choice between a Maybach, a Bentley, a Lamborghini, and a Bugatti. I mean, if I sit down, I mean, all four of those have a lot of relative merits. The Maybach is probably going to be able to carry more cargo, like a suitcase or an overnight bag. But Jesus, that Bugatti will flat fly. But you come up against the problem, the rub, when you go, I've made up my mind. I don't want none of them. I want the Ferrari. And they say, well, do you have $275,000, Mr. Kincaid? No. Well, you're not getting no Ferrari. You just had access to a Ferrari or a Bugatti or a Maybach or, you know, a Porsche 911 Turbo. Or Bentley. You had access. No money? Well, fuck you. We're driving. Access. Choices. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, points out, you know, I'm good at renaming things. This thing should be called the Rapture Healthcare Plan. I think now I know why I get kicked out of so many marketing meetings. They'll have that. Or maybe pre-rapture. Right? Little heads-up note coming from Ron in the far frozen north. It'll still be winter there till, like, July. It's been a couple of nights since I've been able to tune in. Got to get my fix before I head out on Saturday to take my lovely bride to the sandbox. Some work and some vacation. Lots of photos will be posted. Yay, I love photos. I live vicariously. Just checking a Facebook post I put up a couple of days ago, Ron says, and still find it hard to believe. Is H.R. 1275, World's Greatest Healthcare Plan of 2017, the actual Republican Healthcare Act, or just a surrogate put out there
by a Republican asshat so that he can brag back in his Texas riding. Oh, you've been in Canada too long. You called it a riding. Down here, we call it a district. In the UK, one stands for election. In America, because we're exceptional, we run for it. But no, that's the Freedom Caucus bill. The world's greatest health care plan of 2017 is the Freedom Caucus, Louis Gohmert, et al. Poor people getting too much stuff. Healthcare plan. Yeah. It's real. The Mac says sentient Americans are frightened for good reason. The current administration seems to believe that fouled water, polluted air, dismantled and hobbled public education system, substandard healthcare, giveaways to the military-industrial complex, who, by the way, are unable to sustain a fiscal audit, are normal. What seems to make the situation even worse is the attempted subversion of our press, our free press. In addition, I'm alarmed at how many Americans do not see similarities between senior White House advisors and Goebbels. Are we that far gone? Yes, we're that far gone. Like I said, we suspended the Hitler rule a long time ago. Godwin's law is dead. When your history, when your current events begin to resemble at a one-to-one analogous rate, the history of the rise of the Third Reich, you know, tormenting Jews, blaming everything on the other, concentrating power, raising the military to cult status, saber rattling. Yeah, we are that far gone. Mitch says, Bob, while driving Tuesday, I turned on the radio and heard Limbaugh while discussing the supposed wiretapping of Trump. Salute Senator Joseph McCarthy for doing mostly good. Jeez. Mitchell in Portland. That's really no surprise. I mean, these guys play a long con. I mean, take for instance the Congressional Review Act. That damn thing was passed in the Clinton administration with no one really understanding that it was ever meant to be anything but a means by which Congress could correct a clerical error in an administrative rule or regulation, or clear up something that was a little bit fuzzy in case maybe the Supreme Court got froggy with it. But way back when, and I saw it in action in Washington, D.C., when they took away clean water from the hillbillies. You know damn good and well that there were Republicans who were thinking, that may be what they think it is, but that ain't what it is. One of these days, we're going to use it, and we are going to use it like a meat axe. I mean, that's in excess of 20 years ago. And it was just laying there dormant, like a nasty little Republican sleeper cell. Same thing for the praising McCarthy business. Anthrax Coulter wrote a book all about that some several years back. And it's just kind of laid around until it proved useful. So it's about 11 minutes past the hour. If y'all would like to participate in conversation here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I invite you to so do.
the stress line, named for Bill and Mr. Stress Miller, is 304-663-4676. Works for some, not for others. 304-663-HORN. The other number, 304-574-8178, works for almost everybody. And then from anywhere on planet Earth that, you know, you can get beyond the firewall, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. That's how easy it is. So jump right in if you'd like to participate. We're going to take a break. It being Thursday and all, we've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And big thanks going out to Julie in Seattle. Hi, Julie. Thank you very, very kindly. Julie answered Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge. So now we've only got $100 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. You know, 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 4 at 25, 3 at $33.33, 1 at 100, 2 at 50. However you care to do it, but that'll keep the ball rolling and keep the bills paid. Thank you, one and all. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, March 9, 2017.
More than a million acres burning tonight across Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Kansas.
State of emergency declared for early season wildfires across four states. Trump administration plans cuts to Coast Guard, FEMA, and Energy Star program. Gulf of Mexico dolphins still suffering effects of the 2010 BP oil disaster. Plus,
air pollution is something that we can solve.
Pollution is responsible for the deaths of 1.7 million children each year.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The rationale for the proposed cuts? Limiting federal spending and overreach by allowing states to enforce environmental laws.
What could possibly go wrong? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, is it just me or does it seem very, very early for wildfire season to already be kicking off?
It is very, very early for wildfire season, especially in Oklahoma. Now, this is the state that in early February hit a record high of 100 degrees. Now, a state of emergency has been declared by Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon due to an outbreak of wildfires in what officials say is the worst wildfire event in Northwest Oklahoma history. This early season outbreak of wildfires across four states, Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, and Colorado, has already killed at least six people and burned more than a million acres.
What's the name of the new EPA administrator again?
Scott Pruitt.
And he doesn't believe in climate change, right?
No, he doesn't.
And where is he from again?
Oklahoma.
Huh.
Well, the wildfires are also what makes the Trump administration's proposed budget cuts even more inexplicable. The Trump administration's Office of Management and Budget proposes slashing the budget of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, by 15%, and that would directly affect disaster relief, response, and recovery for states that have natural disasters like tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, and wildfires, like in Oklahoma. The Office of Management and Budget also plans significant cuts to the U.S. Coast Guard. That would impact not only national security in protecting the nation's vast coastlines, but also the Coast Guard's operations in curbing illegal fishing, its capacity as the first responder to offshore oil spills, and the Coast Guard's operations in the Arctic, especially now that Russia is expanding its reach in exploiting the melting Arctic's fossil fuel resources.
I thought that Donald Trump was going to increase military spending by $54 billion. Is the Coast Guard no longer a part of the military?
Apparently not.
That's weird.
The OMB also proposes eliminating the popular Energy Star program for consumer products. The Energy Star program sets energy efficiency standards for appliances and electronics that save consumers money, billions in energy costs every single year. Of course, that may be why it's slated for elimination, because $1 billion saved is $1 billion not paid to the energy industry.
Well said.
Meanwhile, a group of scientists who are tracking changes to the websites of federal science agencies announced this week that the website of the Environmental Protection Agency's Science and Technology Office has removed the word science from its mission statement. So the EPA Science and Technology Office writes clean water standards. Its website used to say it relied on science-based standards for clean drinking water. Now it just says it relies on, quote, economically and technologically achievable standards for clean water.
Wow. Talk about lowering the bar.
The new Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke this week announced another sale of leases for offshore drilling in federal waters in the Gulf of Mexico. But scientists say wildlife in the Gulf still hasn't recovered from the BP oil disaster in 2010. A new study finds the endangered Kemp's Ridley sea turtle still has a 75% mortality rate. Bottlenose dolphin populations in the Gulf are still suffering high rates of severe lung disease and low reproductive rates. Pollution is also a leading cause of death among young children around the world. That's according to new data from the World Health Organization. Pollution is responsible for 25% of the deaths of young children under the age of five around the world. That is 1.7 million children every year from toxic air, contaminated water, and lack of sanitation. Air pollution is particularly inescapable, warns WHO Director General Dr. Margaret Chan in an interview with the BBC.
Everybody has to breathe. And when breathing becomes deadly, the entire city, doesn't matter which part you are in, become a hazard to health.
Finally, though, some good news. The air is a lot cleaner in the United Kingdom now as the British government phases out the use of coal. And the UK's carbon emissions have fallen at the same time by switching to cleaner burning natural gas, ramping up renewables, and also with a strong carbon tax. That carbon tax has helped cut Britain's emissions to 19th century levels.
Silly Britain. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Love that song. It well played, Brad and Desi. 22 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday at the Horn. Note coming in from Steve in New York, a member of the Fraternity of Steve. The health care bill. It's not the first time I've heard shit from the GOP. However, this time, Bob, this really has truly sucked the air out of my lungs. This really feels like the final stake in the heart. There seems to be a real mean and nasty intent to harm. That's not a byproduct of a bad policy here. That seems like the actual intent.
Well, it is.
And that's what I'm trying to convey. I mean, I'm not being critical of you, Steve. Although you might try to write with a little less sycophancy, okay? So that, you know, right. They're trying to kill people. They know they're going to kill people. And they intend to kill people. That is a homicidal intent. And there is not a damn thing short of voting that we can do to stop them. We cannot even defend ourselves except at the ballot box. And I know what you mean when you say this really feels like a final stake in the heart. You know, I mentioned, I just say this because, you know, we're a community, we're a family, we're a congregation, and we share this with each other. I had a CT scan yesterday. An uninsured CT scan. Jesus, I can't even stand the thought of what that bill's going to look like. But, as I told you, it was kind of weird. Because they said, hold on, don't go away, just go sit in the waiting room. There's something about your spleen that looks odd. My spleen? I'm used to my pancreas looking odd. Never had my spleen look odd. And so later on they came back and said, oh, no, the radiologist said just go home, your doctor will talk to you tomorrow. Because, again, you know, the radiologist became a radiologist so he wouldn't actually have to deal with human beings. He'd just look at pictures all day. And I understand that. You know, but I on Twitter I follow Nicole Sandler. And this whole thing is extremely personal for her, too. Because she's battling lung cancer. And she understands that from Paul Ryan down to the newbiest backbencher in the Republican caucus, every last one of them are actively trying to kill her. And I admire her for her guts and courage in continuing to fight and to continue to stand up and speak out. So today, in fact, I did get a call back, not from my doctor, but from his nurse, who explained to me that they'd gotten the report on the CT scan, and that they'd tried to get hold of the surgeon with whom I've consulted in the past, but, you know, he's been gone for a few days. He's on vacation or something. And you wouldn't want to ruin that. So they consulted with another surgeon who said, wow, this is really above my pay grade. Let's refer him to a surgeon in Charleston. Maybe we'll need to take out his spleen. That is the first time in my life I've ever had anybody... Look, I've never had a knife put to my body. I've never even had so much as a broken bone. And for that, I consider myself fortunate, but you wonder maybe if the goddess of irony was just saving it all for, you know, one big wallop. I hurt substantially every day of my life and have for well over a month now. And before that, you know, these things just come along. And back in December, they went in and drained a pseudocyst on my pancreas. And now they say that there's one on my spleen. And we don't. And like I said, we don't need to know if we need to just go in and drain that, or if we need to just take the damn thing out. I would be lying if I said that this is not absolutely terrifying to me. And possibly, you know, it feels like homicidal intent. Because, again, no coverage. And whatever we had is going away. Again, this is not to get people, you know, this is not about getting emails saying, oh, Bob, I'm so sorry. No. I don't know what the answer is. I genuinely do not know what the answer is. But I do know that whatever the answer is, the Republican Party is working hammer and tongs to make sure that I cannot afford whatever the answer is. Because under their nasty little bill, it's not like healthcare prices are going to go down. They're going to go up. These clowns are talking about giving people a $3,000 tax credit as opposed to the immediate real-time subsidy of around $8,500 that some people get to be able to afford health care under the Affordable Care Act, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And that's to provide coverage that costs up north of $10,000 a year. So you're going to go from having $1,500 in bills to pay for coverage to having $7,000, $7,500, maybe $8,000. And in the particular case of the woman who noticed that, back in 2016, for the first time ever, she actually voted in a presidential election. Want to guess who she voted for? Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yep. Comrade Kumquat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just a way. I mean, this is real. Again, I don't say this for sympathy. I say this by way of highlighting the fact and mentioning Nicole Sandler and in the chat room, Barkway's husband. And, because it goes on to the tune of millions of people in this country, that they could, that the Republicans, if they had their druthers, would just as easily and more cheaply march off to the well-placed oven. Because they are that kind of people. Okay, that's enough about me. Let's run out New Mexico way and check in with Labor Man. Hey, Labor Man. Hey, Gary.
How are you doing, Bob? Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Okay. I haven't called in a while.
Has been.
Anyway, I did something that, sort of, more or less by accident. Something I don't normally do is I actually watched MSN, I think it was, and I was going through some channels, and I, you know, I hit MSN, and then there was a TV screen up there, and it said the American Healthcare Act. And then, you know, the host or whatever, you know, I think it was a gal, You know, she says, well, Paul Ryan's going to come out and you know, give a presentation about their health care bill. And I said to myself, you know, instant before I was going to click it forward to the next channel, I says, well, let me check this asshole out. And I watched the whole thing.
Did you feel the sudden urge to void your guts and vomit your brains out?
No. Actually, just the opposite. Actually, because I says, okay, I'm going to listen to him like I'm just an average person who doesn't do any research whatsoever.
Ah, you know, thought experiment.
I'm the mom or the pop, you know, the soccer mom or the, what do you call her dad?
Joe Sixpack.
I don't know. Joe Sixpack and the soccer mom and, you know, that's got three fucking kids and they're both busting their ass working and, what you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and they don't spend a lot of time being plugged into to politics or culture, and they're worn out at the end of the day, and they just want to make sure that shit works.
Okay. At the end of it, okay, at the end of it, I say, I got to be jumping up out of my fucking chair and saying, I want to buy some of that.
Oh, it was probably better than the Popeil's pocket fisherman, wasn't it?
I tell you what, that motherfucker's smooth. I mean, he's smooth, you know. And you know, he didn't answer a lot of questions afterward. But nobody out there in the media really pressed him on some of the major issues that, you know, some of the Democrats and some of the other outside organizations are criticizing what this bill is about at all. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean it does say something that they released the bill, they introduced the bill, they've had hearings on the bill, they've passed the bill out of committee, all without having a Congressional Budget Office score on it, because they know that is going to be a death knell. They know what it's going to be. It's going to be a disaster. Well, from a money standpoint,
he thwarted the whole scoring notion anyway. He had a whole spiel on, you know, how did they score Obamacare? They fucked up their scoring royally on the Obamacare, didn't they? You know, blah blah blah, you know. So it's like it's going to get scored, you know, somewhere down the road here, not in the not too far distant future,
and preferably with
how
their
bad
and,
that score looks
right, and preferably they'll have their thumb on the scales when they score it. Yeah, they'll have their thumb on the scales when they score it.
You know, so it was a sight. You know, he had his little PowerPoint up there, he was, you know, and I'll tell you, if he wasn't reading. Off of what the hell's the thingy, the one that front
the teleprompter
goes around, teleprompter. If he wasn't reading off of a teleprompter, in between, you know, what he had up on the PowerPoint, you know, on the screen, man, he's fucking good. He's a hell of a presenter. I'll give him credit.
Well, he's smooth, and see, that's all. If you're a Republican, all you have to do is show up on TV and not pick your teeth with your toenail clippings, and the for-profit media, Gary, will say, my goodness, he certainly is a right-wing conservative. He certainly is a conservative policy analyst, isn't he, Jim?
I'll tell you, man. I give the guy credit. You know, I mean, he's got... I give him credit for the talent
that
he has
in
bullshit, okay?
But the thing is, Gary, he never could have withstood anything resembling hard questioning.
Oh no, probably not. But well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, they generally don't answer the tough questions. You know, they just answer them the way they want to answer them, like Sessions when Franklin asked him that question. you know, they don't want to answer the question. They just want to fucking, you know.
I think I'm going to sit here and lie for a little while. Yes, that's what I'm going to do. Goodness me. I'm going to lie like a rug.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to recuse myself, which is probably an answer, you know, that Franklin would have, expected, I would think. But, no, listen. Okay, let's do some real quick out-of-my-asshole analysis.
Yes.
That's the best face I could put on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I started thinking, after all was said and done, that little news conference was over, I started thinking, okay, I'm listening to this guy, and I'm ready to jump up and buy this fucking insurance. You know? He got me sold. Okay? And then I started to think, okay, I would probably know it's really shit. It's going to hurt a lot of people. I started thinking, okay, well, who is it going to hurt? You know, what are the categories of people it's going to hurt? And are those, number one, possible votes that will come back and hurt him or them or the Republican Party? I started thinking a little bit. I don't want to go through it because I was breaking shit down in my mind and, you know, starting to go crazy and saying, how the fuck are they going to get away with this? You know, is my question. How the fuck are they going to get away with it? Because I believe it's going to pass.
Oh, it's going to pass.
All the Republicans who are squawking and bitching and all the righties who just want to repeal Obamacare altogether. They really have people die faster. You know, I mean, these guys.
Yeah,
afraid of losing votes.
Paul Ryan will allow the Freedom Caucus to hoot and squeal and roll on the floor and speak in tongues and drink strychnine and holler about liberty and freedom for a little bit. And then they'll get in line and they'll vote for it. And they'll go back to their districts in 18 and they'll say, yeah, but I tried to keep us from having Obamacare light, but I was done outvoted. I almost guarantee you that the final floor vote in the House will be almost exclusively along party lines.
Oh, yeah. And same thing in the Senate. It'll be 52-48.
Right, because like I said, the dude from Colorado and Rob Portman from Ohio and Shelley Moore from West Virginia and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska will fold like a cheap suit. And do what Mitch McConnell goddamn well tells them to do.
Yeah, so I don't know. He said something, you know, he said something about the bill is somewhere online. You can read it.
Oh, yeah.
Not that that's going to, help me, you know. I don't know if in the way they write them fucking bills, you know, they're not easy to understand.
Well, reading legalese, and it's going to be written in legalese.
Yeah,
is, I mean, that's an acquired skill, because it'll be written with a lot of independent and dependent clauses and prepositional phrases and semicolons and wherefores and but notwithstandings. Until it's near impossible to comprehend for a layperson. And it's by design that way.
Okay, so I was wondering, is there somewhere where you could find out under the ACA the numbers of people and the different like categories of people who are insured under the ACA? In other words, people who work, okay, and their employer provides health insurance, okay, they're not part of the ACA, correct?
yes and no. I mean, it's not that clear. I mean, for instance, if you've got health care through your employer, then that means that you don't get penalized under the individual mandate that otherwise is an IRS penalty. So I mean, they've got some at the very least tangential connections. You know, the single largest group that's been insured are the people who have never had insurance before, working poor, who got it through the Medicaid expansion. I'm pretty sure.
Uh-huh.
Then you've got people who get, you know, the subsidies and are able to buy insurance. And then people with, say, employer provided, or in the case of, you know, like the building trades that have their own insurance plans, that kind of thing. It's not within the body of the ACA itself, but those numbers are out there because you'll see them come across in news stories from time to time. But the devil, as they say, is always in the details, Gary. That's why you had that exchange.
Yeah,
that's why you had that exchange between Joe Kennedy and the lawyer for the Republicans in the committee last night, wherein he said, I've read it, and I just want to make sure I understand something straight up. Coverage for mental health and substance abuse goes away under the Republican plan. And the Republican lawyer said, yep. But you'd never know unless you asked.
So let's get back to votes. Okay. And so we know there's going to be a number of people. Aside from premiums going up, okay, whether it's employer provided program that you're in, or you're just going out and buying on an exchange in your state, and those premiums going up. Other than premiums going up, because that right away they're going to blame that on Obamacare. You know,
they're going to blame it all on Obama, Gary. If somebody brings a Republican a cold cup of coffee, it's the fault of Barack Obama.
Okay, so you got like really, really poor people who get covered under Medicaid, who would be covered under Medicaid previously to Obamacare.
Well, wait.
By showing up at the emergency room to get treatment because it's an emergency.
Well, not exactly, Gary, because posted at every emergency room in the United States is a statement that if you cannot afford coverage, if you cannot afford treatment, their only obligation is to stabilize you. So that's not treatment. That's not treatment qua treatment.
Let you in and then turn you loose.
To try to get at the idea of Medicaid a little better. Medicaid was initially meant as health care coverage for the extremely poor. And depending on what state you're in, for instance, if you are a single working person with no children in Alabama and you live under a cardboard box, the ownership of that cardboard box under the means testing involved will prevent you from qualifying for Medicaid coverage. Under the Medicaid, and other states have different and sometimes more liberal and more humane rules. California is more humane than Alabama, for instance. And you have coverage for poor families with children on the idea that it's pretty important for children to have parents, and so parents have to be able to go to the doctor.
Okay, so that group we're just talking about, loss of votes to them with that group. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Right.
Where are they going to lose votes?
Right. And
the poor, they're not losing any votes, right?
Probably
not.
They're
not losing any votes with that group. And the biggest bulk of all the people who have health care insurance are people who get it through work, and they're not going to lose votes there. So where are they going to lose votes to not get them?
Well, that's a fair question, and that's part of a larger question I asked the other night. You know, look, if you live in a state where you did not have the Medicaid expansion, how are you going to go and protest over something you never had? How are you going to punish a legislator for something you've never had? There have been, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, there have been 2010, 2012, 2014, 2016, there have been four election cycles, and the House has been up for re-election, the entire House, all four times.
And they've never been hurt.
And they've never been hurt. It has never cost them anything.
Right. All the states that didn't accept the expansion.
And, or that did. I mean, it just doesn't hurt them. Now, the expansion itself eliminated the means testing because there was sort of an understanding that if we're going to provide health insurance to the working poor, they kind of need to have a car and a place to live. So we're not going to hold that against them. And it expanded expanded the threshold to 137%. Of the poverty level.
Yeah.
And so if you're a four person family, you know, that can run you up. You can make as much as maybe $32,000 a year and still get coverage.
Okay. So let's look at it again. So let's say the Medicaid group of folks, okay, and the people who are covered under an employer plan, okay, got to be the lion's share of people. So what we have left, what percent do you think we have left? 20?
Oh, I'm not so sure about that, Gary, because the number of people who got insurance through the Medicaid expansion who had never had insurance before is sizable. I mean, it's big.
Well, they're saying 20 million.
Right? It's the single largest group of insureds in the state of West Virginia, for instance.
Larger than employer-based?
Oh, hell yeah.
Wow. Do y'all fucking work it all up there?
And we work like damn dogs. But the single largest employer in West Virginia is University Health Systems, and the second largest is Walmart, and Walmart ain't providing no health care coverage.
Not to very many.
Yeah, well, it's effectively zero.
Because in my estimation, they got to be doing a calculus on. You know, does this hurt us at the polls?
Yeah.
Or not hurt us?
Well, I think they figure it's not going to hurt us because even in West Virginia, okay, there are thousands, okay, if not tens of thousands, of people who have health insurance for the first time in their lives. And on any given day, you can hear them still going on and on about that Kenyan Muslim, that word, Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And his war on coal.
Oh, they're going to blame him.
And so,
you know,
they're not going to march. For one.
No.
They got to go to work.
They're not going
to
vote either.
And
they're not going to vote either. Fuck marching. They're not going
to
vote.
Well, you know what? There's an element of truth to that, too. Although some of them did go out and vote and eagerly voted for Trump.
And they'll do it again.
And they will do it again.
Okay. Anyway, I was just, you know, because I think it's going to go through. You know, people are saying, you know, here, there, you know, they got the talking heads on, and And, you know, I watch a little bit of that, and I'm saying, nah, you know, these fucking
people, they
know they can do it and get away with it.
And see, the thing is, if you're talking about TV news, you've got to, and this isn't me, like, you know, explaining, you already know this, but you've got to understand that in the TV news business and the commentary business, what you have to do is set up conflict and talk about conflict. If you just come on and say, hey, they're going to do it, then that's one less thing to get a ratings point over, which that you then use to try to sell advertising to people so that they can tell other people to buy an herbal erection supplement. There's one thing beyond this. Now, and this is interesting. Most of the Republican bill can go through the Senate under budget reconciliation. Okay?
That's what he was stressing.
It'll go through on a 51-49 vote. You do not have to meet the 60-vote threshold.
Right. That's what he was stressing.
However,
his presentation, Paul Ryan.
However, there is one aspect of that that doesn't. The part of this bill that allows insurance companies to impose a 30% surcharge on anybody who lets coverage lapse, that's not reconciliation stuff. That needs 60 votes.
Yeah, I don't get why or wherefore. I didn't understand when he was talking about that. I didn't have a clue what the fuck he was talking about, to be honest with you, you know.
Well, budget reconciliation is also known as the Byrd Rule. And what happens there is that any bill that doesn't yield a change in outlays or revenues to the federal government itself from a budgetary basis can't be used in reconciliation.
Then how is this one? They got to pay out money and
no, the government doesn't. It doesn't affect the budget. The government doesn't have to pay out that money. Individual citizens do. So it can't fall.
Pay out money.
Yeah. It doesn't. That doesn't affect the federal budget. It just affects people who get punished because some clerk somewhere in some health insurance company conveniently mislaid an application when somebody changed jobs, and so therefore they get charged, you know, the insured gets charged and, you know, an extra $90 a month for 6 months or something. But it does not affect the federal budget, therefore it cannot move on a 51-49 basis under reconciliation.
That's still confusing to me, but
it's a mighty thin string to hang one's hopes on, but it's a little more comprehensible, Gary, if you think about it in terms of the individual mandate. Okay, the individual mandate that said if you don't carry health insurance, we're going to impose a penalty upon you. The IRS is going to impose a penalty on you. Well, that did affect the federal budget because it meant that there would be monies coming into the federal treasury as a result of those penalties being paid. And so, therefore, the original ACA could pass under reconciliation.
Well, here's another group that are going to be happy with this bill. I started thinking about it. And it'll be younger people who have had to buy insurance who really didn't want to, but they didn't want to pay a penalty, so they went out and bought insurance. Okay, now they don't have to. So a lot of them, I think, are going to say, fuck it, I ain't going to buy none.
Yeah, but they're also not going to go vote. I mean, didn't we kind of find that out last November?
Yeah, that could be true. Yeah.
I don't know
what the size of that group would be anyway.
Well, the millennials are the single largest voting bloc in the United States.
I don't know, but anyway, that's to me, that's a group that's like, yeah, I like this. Fuck it, I don't have to buy insurance anymore.
Right, because they're bulletproof and they're never going to get sick.
Yeah, I'll save, you know, $200 a month or $300 a month or, you know, whatever they were paying for, whatever, you know, the cheapest plan out there or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's a hell of a fucking salesman. That's all I could tell you, you know. That's all I could tell you. They need some Democrats to get up there and put together who this is going to send to the grave, you know. But again, if the people going to the grave are ones that don't fucking vote, you know,
right,
probably isn't going to matter. So
not damn much.
I think it's going to pass. But the other part was something about, you know, older people paying more.
Yeah.
About people on Medicare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because the ultimate goal, Gary, is to destroy it all. These guys are Vandals, Visigoths. These are the Huns. This is the horde galloping across Asia and just burning everything in sight. Their goal is to create an Ayn Rand anarcho-capitalist, free market, so-called, paradise, where the government doesn't do anything but give out tax dollars to defense contractors. And that's it.
Yep. I saw an article in the scroll on my MSN homepage, and, you know, it says something about the EPA guy says, oh, no, fucking carbon dioxide doesn't do warming. The EPA guy, you know, that crazy guy from Oklahoma.
Oh, Scott Pruitt, yeah, he's not crazy. Uh-huh. He's evil. He doesn't care who he kills.
Yeah. Crazy.
But again, he's part of a set piece. They don't care who they kill. I mean, they do care who they kill. They've got a set list of people they want to kill. They don't want to hurt the money.
Yeah, okay. All right, listen, let me get off of here. I've been on here far too long.
Let's All right, Gary, well, thank you very kindly, and okay. I do appreciate the call. It's always good talking to you.
All right,
bye.
Have a good one. Bye.
Gary, labor man, longtime supporter of the program, calling from New Mexico. By the way, I neglected to mention, I popped into the chat room and checked it out because it's not on the same screen with all my other stories. And there is a $50 challenge on the table. A $50 new caller challenge. So if you've never called the program, there's a challenge on the table. Somebody, I don't know who, said they will put up $50 to encourage a noob to make their first call to the program. Also, thanks are going out to to Ron in the far frozen north, and to Frank, and between the two of them, we have actually less than $50 to go in fundraising for the evening. Ron loves it when I cipher. So let's see, 48 dollars. $48.36 to go. $48.36 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thanks, y'all. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Ron. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. But Bob, as you just said, they're going to give you a tax credit and the ability to have health savings account. What more do you want? Remember Mr. Dupree last week and all that free stuff you can get? Cousin Dupree, how could I ever forget him? Meanwhile, James says, the Affordable Care Act, it's not an insurance company, a group of doctors, or a bunch of hospitals. It's a set of rules for the aforementioned and a system that provides for financial support in order to facilitate them. Absolutely. And that is offensive to the Republican mindset, because the government shouldn't be in the rulemaking business. Oh, no. Hell no. Absolutely not. Meanwhile, I got a note from Arnold. with regard to all these Republicans who are so hell-bent on killing Americans, defenseless Americans. I'm just going to throw a general fuck them all out there, Bob. There's really too many to name individually. Yeah, it takes a while. And since Gary Laborman mentioned Scott Pruitt over at EPA, and since it somehow didn't quite make it into the Green News Report this evening, the story broke today. The Hill had the coverage. The head. Okay, we'll back off. Back up a minute. Back up. Back off! There is this concept, and I'm sure many of you are aware of it, called environmental justice. And it's not just some fuzzy little meaningless phrase like neoliberal has become. It still has meaning. It doesn't mean anything Jill Stein doesn't like. Environmental justice is a concept that describes an effort to take into account the needs of almost always poor people, quite frequently people of color, although poor whites can be involved too, see Appalachia, who almost always bear the entire burden of the toxic effects of pollution. For instance, there's no toxic waste dump next door to that tacky-ass pile of concrete known as Trump Tower. There is no, toxic waste incinerator next to Paul Ryan's house or Scott Pruitt's. No, things like that are reserved for places where poor people cannot defend themselves. And so some years back in the Environmental Protection Agency, a Department of Environmental Justice was created. And the purpose of that office was to address issues and be a receptive ear for poor communities that were being run over by polluters. I've been in meetings at the EPA where representatives from the Environmental Justice Office were present. The focus of the Environmental Justice Office isn't really environmental justice, but rather addressing the problems occasioned by environmental injustice. Places like Perry County, Alabama, where people have been poisoned by having coal ash from the TVA disaster around Christmas time several years ago, transported by rail and dumped in their county landfill. And of course, that community is almost entirely African American. Environmental justice takes into account the fact that the original route of the Dakota Access Pipeline just happened to go near some white folks' neighborhoods near Bismarck, North Dakota. And the white folks said, "Woo, no, not us. Why don't you run it by them damn Indians down there? They're too drunk to notice." And so they did. And it was an act of manifest environmental injustice. There are the environmental injustices occasioned by the fact that railroad tracks seldom run through wealthy neighborhoods, instead run through poor areas of town, and that's where the bomb trains go. You get the idea. Well, the head of the EPA Environmental Justice Department just quit. Yep. Mustafa Ali has been at the Environmental Protection Agency for 24 years of his life on this planet. And after 24 years at the EPA, which means, let's see, 24 years, okay, so 17 is 2000. He's been there since 1993. He came in under Bill Clinton. He lasted through the two terms of the Reign of Error of George W. Bush. He was there for the two terms of Barack Obama, and not even three full months, not even two full months, into the presidency of Comrade Kumquat, he's quit. He tendered his resignation letter to Scott Pruitt, who didn't give a fuck, because Scott Pruitt doesn't give a fuck about whether or not poor people get poisoned. Inside Climate News had the story initially, and they interviewed Mustafa Ali, and he said the Trump administration doesn't give any indication that they're focused or interested in helping those vulnerable communities. My values and priorities seem to be different than our current leadership, and because of that, I feel it's best if I take my talents elsewhere. Among other things, he also said, we've had both Republican and Democratic administrations over time, and none of them tried to do anything to destroy what the previous administration had done. Folks are just hoping that this one will wake up and see value in continuing this important work. Well, not to be a complete asshole, but hope in one hand and shit in the other, and see which one fills up first. Asked about environmental justice in his confirmation hearings, where, of course, Quisling Joe Manchin voted enthusiastically for his confirmation, Scott Pruitt said, I'm familiar with the idea of environmental justice. Well, hell, I'm familiar with the idea of genocide. That doesn't mean I approve of it. And his familiarity with the idea of environmental justice doesn't indicate he approves of it either. In his written answer, he said, the administrator plays an important role regarding environmental justice. I agree that it is important that all Americans be treated equally under the law, including environmental laws. Bullshit. If he wanted people treated equally under the law, he would have said, hey, let's reroute that there Dakota Access Pipeline back through that white neighborhood. And yes, Mustafa Ali's department has been gutted under Trump administration. I'm sorry, Gene, I'm sorry. Under Trump regime, budgetary wishes. Justice? environmental justice? We don't need no stinking environmental justice. Hell no. I mean, there's goddamn sure none of it to be found around here. Joe Manchin doesn't breathe blasting dust every time he steps outside of his home. Oh, hell no, he doesn't. Oh, but speaking of the Dakota Access Pipeline, line's open, by the way, if anybody wants to jump in. Skype, 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. You remember when the Tangerine Tiberius promised, guaranteed, that the Dakota Access Pipeline would be made with Merkin steel? It was, in fact, last month when the Clementine Caligula said, if they want a pipeline in the United States, they're going to use pipe that's made in the United States. Do we agree? And all the little Trumpanzees hopped up and down and waved their MAGA hats and clutched their Chinese-made Merkin flags to their little heaving breastises. Right. Well, no. The Dakota Access Pipeline is not going to be built with Merkin steel. A White House spokesperson, spoke to Politico on March the 2nd. Saying, the Keystone XL pipeline is currently in the process of being constructed, so it does not count as a new retrofitted, repaired, or expanded pipeline. That means that Keystone doesn't have to be made with steel made in the United States. And the same thing applies to the Dakota Access Pipeline. Of course, the suckers don't know this because it's not like they're publishing this over at that website that rhymes with light and fart. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, or as importantly, something like that might be seen as protectionist and get a nice little trade war going in the trade courts. But then there's something else, or someone else more particularly. Wilbur Ross, the brand spanking new Commerce Secretary. Yippers. He's a former board member of ArcelorMittal. In fact, he helped build ArcelorMittal. That's a steel company from Luxembourg. ArcelorMittal is a major supplier for the Keystone XL pipeline. 13%, in fact, of ArcelorMittal's carbon steel coils happens in the United States, that business, that aspect of their business. Mm-hmm. So, all you, all those steel workers who bought the snake oil and guzzled it with a swirly straw because Trump was going to bring back the steel industry. Suckers! Of course, they didn't expect that anyway. I stand by my analysis. Any reason cited by a Trumpanzee for voting for Donald Trump is a fig leaf for the vile, vicious, toxic, consumptive racism and hatred that had been boiling inside them for the previous 8 years. How else do you explain the fact that they're pissed off at an economic downturn that really got going and fully manifested itself on Barack Obama's watch, but was actually engineered during the reign of error between 2001 and 2009? You know, dim leader. Oh, there I go, being an apologist for Barack Obama again. God damn it. He was a neoliberal! And he didn't wave his magic wand and just make things happen. He didn't go over the Congress's head and just declare himself maximum Kenyan dictator for life and do stuff. How dare he? Mm-hmm. Interestingly, at the same time that Politico was reporting about the fact that the Keystone Project ain't going to use U.S. steel, a whole bunch of steel industry associations got together and wrote a sternly worded letter to Marcus Aurelius and to the leaders of the Republican caucuses in the Congress. They wrote, "The American steel and iron industries and their workers strongly oppose efforts to weaken Buy America by allowing imported steel that is finished in the United States to be used in taxpayer-funded infrastructure projects." To which the Trump administration and the Republican members of Congress just... Fuck off! That's what they did. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's just another bit of smoke and mirrors. Sure. And it doesn't have to fool you. Doesn't have to fool me. All it has to do is fool the rubes. See how it works? Oh, and by the way, what I was talking about with Gary a couple of minutes ago, all that business about you know, the Byrd rule and budget reconciliation and 51-49 versus a 60-vote threshold. Well, I have, because we're talking about Republicans here, who have about as much regard for the law and for regulations and for rules as a hog does for a three-piece Sunday suit. Well, I've got this sneaking suspicion they're going to say, well, fuck all that. We're just going to pass this. Hell, if it winds up being 52 against and 49-4,
we're going to declare it a winner anyway. We can do that. Shit. We're Republicans. We ain't some panty-waist bunch of Harry Reid liberals. Rules. Fuck a bunch of rules. Bullshit on rules. Screw the rules. Rules were made for sissies.
Witness the words of Senator Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. He talked to the folks at the Hill, and he said, under the Budget Act of 1974, which is what governs reconciliation, it is the presiding officer, the Vice President of the United States, who rules on what's permissible on reconciliation and what is not. That's a conversation I've been having with a number of my colleagues. You don't have to override the parliamentarian or get a new parliamentarian. Under the statute, it is the Vice President who rules. It is the presiding officer who makes the decision. The parliamentarian advises on that question. So, in essence, Rafaelito is saying that Mike Pence will just step in, ignore the law, and do what he's been told. Are you inspired? I'm not. I think I just scared myself some more. But then again, it's kind of hard to figure out exactly where that line is now. Just because you got to get up early to make your list of what to be worried about. Healthcare, the fact that Comrade Kumquat is probably a Russian agent. Oh, I know, that'll piss off the sparkle ponies.
There's nothing wrong with Russia, they're cuddly and snuggly. They love us.
Yeah. The environment? The ability of people to live in the environment? How much climate change will accelerate under the gross, willful, wanton, reckless negligence of this regime? Pick one. Maybe it's something you maybe you worry about one thing on days that don't have R's in them, and you worry about a different one on days that do. I got nothing. I mean, it's just kind of difficult. Oh, remember. Oh, it was back before the power outage. Remember when we talked about that nasty ass restaurant in Trump's nasty ass hotel, BLT Prime? That was where that was where Trump went out to eat and had a burned up piece of shoe leather that he slathered in ketchup. and who's whose owner is, you know, a scumbag. Yeah. Well, there was a development in the last day or so. Donald Trump has been sued again. And this one has some meaning. BuzzFeed had the story. A group of restaurant owners in D.C., the owners of the Cork Wine Bar, have filed a lawsuit against the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And the nature of their complaint is that his hotel not only competes for general customers, okay, that's business, but also specifically for clients seeking to do business with and influence U.S. government and elected officials. Now, this means something. Because the lease says that no one connected to the federal government can profit by the monies made by that property, the old post office building on Pennsylvania Avenue. And Trump, meanwhile, has not, for all the ballyhoo, has not removed himself from that business.
I turned it over to Ivanka to run. She's a fabulous businesswoman, but I turned it over to Udi and Cootie, and you know, maybe when I'm done being president, I'll go back, and I hope I don't have to look at him and say, you're fired.
Remember that? Well, this lawsuit, and I think there's been some angling going on, waiting for the right plaintiff for this lawsuit. Because this goes to the very heart of that lease agreement with the building. According to the suit papers, the effects of that unfair advantage, you know, the fact that he's president of the United States and can therefore lure customers to his tacky-ass restaurant, overpriced and shitty food, the fact that he can lure customers there by virtue of the fact that you'll have foreign governments who want to curry favor with him in direct contravention of the Emoluments Clause. I don't care what you say. I don't think melanoma likes it when he rubs the emollients all over.
It rubs the emollients on the skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Gonna keep using that joke till it's not funny anymore. The effects of that unfair advantage are magnified greatly by marketing activities of the hotel's officers and employees, and the similar activities of Defendant Trump, his family, and the White House staff and or advisors. There are allegations of fact within the suit papers, for instance, that foreign diplomats patronize the hotel, and the hotel is now the in place for lobbyists who want to influence the new administration. Mm-hmm. In a press conference this morning announcing the case, Scott Rome, one of the lawyers who filed the suit, said, it's clear that those who are looking to influence this administration are going to look to that business first. And they even took away a point of complaint from the Peachy Pasha.
They're just trying to get money out of me. They're just trying. It's a bogus, baseless lawsuit, and they're just trying.
No, because the ad damnum clause, which is what you call the part of a lawsuit where you ask for judgmental relief, the ad damnum clause to this lawsuit doesn't ask for a penny. Rather, they ask the judge of the D.C. Superior Court to enter an order that puts a halt to the unfair competition that arises because of the unique position of the President of the United States as the, for all intents and purposes, owner of the facility. By way of remedies, the lawyers say that, well, the hotel and the restaurant could close during the pendency of Trump's time in office, which would probably be a net positive for people visiting Washington, D.C., who, well, you get the idea. Or Trump and his family could fully divest their interests in the hotel, you know, sell out. Then there wouldn't be anything to complain about. Or if he really wants to be in the hotel business and stay in the hotel business, he could simply resign the presidency. Yeah. In case you have no regard whatsoever for your innards and you think you might like to go and eat at BLT Prime, you'll pay 32 bones for a Schooner Bay salmon served with artichokes and chips, vegetable vinaigrette. Dover sole, however, in soy brown butter with capers will set you back $61. Rack of lamb and octopus. I didn't know octopi came in racks. With peppadew and palm puree and curry chimichurri is $45. The dry-aged New York strip that that dumbass had burnt beyond recognition a week or so ago is $54. If you want a salt-aged porterhouse for two, however, at 36 ounces, prime beef, aged 45 days, that's going to put you back 110. The tomahawk and red coat prawns for two will set you back $120. Filet mignons, 52. The bone-in filet mignon at 14 ounces is $64. And the butcher's butter steak, prime rib cap, 10 ounces, is $52. You can add blue crab fondue for 15, truffled fried egg for 12, or garlicky red coat prawns for $18. All your sides are, of course, a la carte. Sautéed kale was, a little dab of sautéed kale set you back $12. Hipster fries with Parmesan shishitos and beef jerky, $16. Bacon and honeyed Brussels sprouts are $13. The eponymous dish of cream spinach is $12. Couch potatoes, whatever the hell they are, with rosemary, onions, and olive oil are $12. And some portion of each and every one of those things goes into the pocket of Donald Trump, no matter how loudly he protests that he's not part of the business. Well, if he's not part of the business, why did he go eat there? There are a hell of a lot better places to eat in Washington, D.C., I can assure you. The Palm Steakhouse is delightful. Never been there. Heard a lot about it. Hell, just walk across Pennsylvania Avenue to Fogo de Chao and eat yourself into a blind, meaty stupor. That, Guy James and I have, by God, done. But all of this is wrapped up inside the Emoluments Clause, which is a real thing, and which I've pointed out from time to time might or might not be a problem. Because the Emoluments Clause makes abundantly clear that the President of the United States cannot accept gifts or monies from foreign powers. The entirety of the Emoluments Clause is as follows. No person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now, the pettifoggers in Trump's pay tried to get around this early on by saying, well, I mean, like you know, fair market value stuff, I mean, that doesn't count, you know, like if somebody like just rents a room or something, I mean, that, no.
Yes. Because the intent of the framers was to make sure not only that the President of the United States did not have conflicts of interest, but, like Caesar's wife, Calpurnia, by the way, like Caesar's wife, would not even display the bare appearance of impropriety.
And that miserable, tacky-ass, overpriced, piece-of-shit hotel and crappy-ass, God-knows-how-many-rats-running-through-the-kitchen restaurant, with every tick of the clock that they are open, are nothing but not just the appearance of a conflict of interest, but a conflict of interest in and of itself. And yes, impeachable. You know, if we had a Congress that was willing to do its job, if we had a Congress that actually had any passing interest in the Constitution, if we had a Congress that would put the country before their malicious, homicidal, terroristic intent to kill millions of Americans with their nasty-ass health care assault. Yeah, maybe. Because I recognize that I'm the one that keeps saying, don't be sitting around hoping for any impeachment to take place. And I stand by that. But from the high-minded ivory tower world of constitutional law, which, if nothing is, if nothing else, is certainly arcane. Well, the Emoluments Clause is a problem. Now, the Emoluments Clause also contains an out. No person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present, yada, yada, yada. There's a key phrase there. A dependent clause. Without the consent of Congress. Aha. Uh-huh. Congress has passed no bill of such consent. And since it says shall without, that carries a sort of anticipatory flavor. In other words, let's say the president wanted to accept his own private oil well from his serene, majestic, noble, high graciousness, the King of Saudi Arabia. Well, he could go to the Congress and say, hey, guys, ladies, the King of Saudi Arabia wants to give me my very own oil well. I know the emoluments clause says I can't, but it says you can give your consent and I can. I've always wanted an oil well. Can I have it, please? And the Congress, if it so chooses, with that in the future, not as a past act, with that in the future, can go, ah, let him have the fucking oil well. Here's the question. Does that also mean that the Congress can retroactively consent? If enough people started raising a stink about violations of the Emoluments Clause, could the Congress say, okay, well, you know what? He's already done it and stuff, but we're making America great again here, and we don't have time for this. So we're going to waive any violations of the Emoluments Clause that he has heretofore committed. That's more problematic. A lot more. Because, among other things, that means the Congress had the chance in advance, like, say, on the first day of the new Congress, to say, we hereby, look, there's going to be trouble, we hereby waive the Emoluments Clause for the President of the United States. To the best of my knowledge, they have not done that. And that's another problem in its own right. Because of Article 1, Section 9 of the United States Constitution. It is one thing to pass a law and say, henceforward, as of the date of the passage of this act, it shall be illegal to jaywalk on the corner of Court and Main. However, Article 1, Section 9 says that the Congress may not pass a law that says 4 years ago it was illegal to jaywalk at the corner of Court and Main. Okay? Oddly enough, the rule against, and it says simply, no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed in Article 1, Section 9. That's the same section that has the Emoluments Clause in it. They work together. The pardon power that is granted under the Constitution is granted to the President of the United States. The Congress has no power to pardon, and a retroactive Emoluments Clause waiver would actually be a constructive pardon. And Congress can't do that. And so to the extent that he has been violating the Emoluments Clause since the moment he took his hand off the Bible, and he has been, he has been committing an ongoing string of high crimes and misdemeanors worthy of impeachment. No, the Republicans are not going to impeach him. And I don't know where this silly notion comes from that, oh, well, you know, once the Republicans have gotten everything they want from him, then they'll dump his ass like a hot rock. Bullshit! The Republican Party has a long goddamn wish list of different ways that they want to fuck the people of the United States of America. Ain't gonna happen. Do you want to see it happen? Do you want his ass impeached? Then study up and find where Republicans can be dumped unceremoniously from their seats. Doesn't take that many. And bust your ass to make it happen. Again, I commend to you the website for the Sister District Project. I commend to you the two congressional candidates mentioned by Mike in Cascadia in his email that I shared at the beginning of this broadcast. Those two individuals, again, are Catherine Allen in the 3rd Congressional District of Utah, and Rob Quist in the only congressional district of Montana. Pay attention in Georgia. Where that homicidal corn pone Mengele, who is hell-bent on killing people by taking away access to health care from them, Tom Price, who's at Department of Health and Human Services. Pay attention to that race. Good God, putting a Democrat in the seat formerly occupied by Newt Gingrich and Tom Price would shake those little rat bastards all the way down to their cloven fucking hooves. Hey, by the way, almost out of time. Got about 11 minutes to go. I'm going to get a quick phone call in. And we still have... what did I say? I should write this stuff down. We have $42.36 to go in fundraising for the evening. $42.36. Thank you very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown for making the challenge last night. That got met. Thank you. $42.36. And perking up the end of my evening, and probably yours as well, it's our buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd.
Bob, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm sure people were concerned about, you know, what's going on with your health, man. Nobody likes to hear that. That was kind of painful, but, you know, the truth is the truth.
Scared the shit out of me. So,
yeah. But, you know, this is a... Oh, by the way, you know what was funny? I was thinking about Sandra from Mid-California, Northern California. And then she called at one day.
Yeah, now of L.A., right, yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking about her. I was like, well, I wonder what happened to Stan. Anyway, that was, I just had to get that off my chest. But listen, I don't quite understand where these folks are going with all this chaos. Because people are really, literally going to die taking the cap off of the medical. I mean, not cap off the medical. I'm sorry. They're putting the cap back on the medical insurance. There's so many things at once. I'm beginning to feel punch drunk. And I'm not the only one. It's just too much.
Well, look, that's Todd, that's by design, brother. That's what the chaos is supposed to accomplish. It is supposed to render people helpless because you never know where the next blow is coming from. It's like being punched by somebody in the dark.
Well, and it feels like it's coming from every direction because when we look at, oh my God, when we look at what's going on, right, with this cabinet, with all these accusations, like why is everyone lying about Russia? I mean, and some of these people are attorneys. They're supposed to know how to answer questions. Just say, yes, I saw him. We talked. Oh, it was chit-chat. And then we moved on. Make them work. I mean, no. And I haven't talked to you since sessions. Oh, my God, that asshole told on himself. What the fuck is that?
Well, that's a manifestation of the level of their hubris. They know they can do things like that and get away.
Bob, he answered the goddamn question.
No, but he lied like a rug. But they know they can get away with it. There's nobody that can call them to account, Todd.
I don't like this shit at all, period. I mean, at some point, we just have to say, no, just stop. Just fucking stop. Everybody just freeze. Okay? Just stop, because this shit is outrageous. I'm not the only one saying this shit.
No, you're not. Not in the least.
No. And thank God for Franken.
Yeah, he can at least haul it out into the light. But that's about all he can do.
So, and by the way, yeah, this is one thing I think people forget. Maybe, I don't know. His minions, the guy's minions, they don't care what he does. But people maybe don't understand or forget that other folks live in Trump Tower. See, there's all kinds of stuff going on in Trump Tower.
Oh, yeah.
And see, in my mind, I can totally see the orange one popping down to somebody else's suite to make some phone calls, okay? Because it's like, he's so stupid. Like, oh, it's not my phone. You know, I'm going to, you know, just go down here. Because he's telling on himself, too. He's scared. Yeah. But see, this stuff is so deep now. And you know, I just feel like it's making our country look weak to our real enemies. And that's the problem. See, this shit is, this is a sideshow. And this shit has got to stop because this is putting us in jeopardy.
Well, I agree, but by the same token, I get emails from people going, Bob, obviously the Russians are dear, sweet, cuddly people, and I don't know why we have to be like beating up on poor little Pooty Poot all the time, because all he wants to do is snuggle. And then every so often, you don't have to look very far, depending on your abilities. You don't have to look very far to find that kind of bullshit opinion journalism masquerading as fact. I mean, it's in practically everything that, that Glenn Greenwald writes, you know, alongside two or three paragraphs about how it's all about Glenn Greenwald and threatening to start a seventh grade slap fight with anybody who disagrees with him.
Right. Well, therein lies the mess. You know, people seek out what they want to seek out in terms of news. Because, you know that phrase is so hackneyed. I'm not even going to say it anymore. But, so at this point, the other guys, they're winning. They are winning right now. And, I mean, I don't know what we're supposed to do. I really don't. Because it doesn't. I don't even know if it matters if you show up to the polls.
No, that does. That has to. If it doesn't, then everything's over. It's just game off and game over, and let's all go and, you know, drink ourselves into a stupor or smoke or whatever it is we do.
This guy, the scary guy, has always scared me, but now he is salivating, and I'm talking about Speaker Ryan, and I'm very worried about him. Oh, you mentioned that earlier. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. This is all the red meat he's ever wanted. You know. It's just too. It's too much going on now. We have to slow this thing down somehow, because the damage that's being done right now is going to take a long time to recover from. Because once you start to take out foundations of the bureaucracy that run this country, you can't develop talent overnight. It doesn't happen like that.
No, and that's always going to be a problem. And you know what another problem is? I mean, and I think we're just being realistic here. In states where we would like, where it would make a really, really, really big difference to snag away a congressional seat,
right.
you have moribund Democratic parties. Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Oklahoma, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Places where the Democratic Party simply doesn't have the talent bench to be able to send anybody into the game ready to play.
That's a bleak picture. Yep.
Sorry. Now, I mean, if you want a little more pleasant vision, there are plenty of places, states where there is the talent and there is a viable party structure. Of course, by mentioning the Democratic Party, the Sparkle Ponies are out there going, "Oh, goddamn, DNC, oh, Donna Brazile, Hillary Clinton, Jesus Christ, emails, Bernie could have won." But the fact of the matter is, there is a structure that can maybe elect some candidates. And I don't know about the Democratic Party in Utah. I don't know if it's anything. I don't even know if there's enough of a Democratic Party in Utah to throw a riot in a goddamn phone booth. But you've got somebody who's raising money hard and is determined to replace Jason Chaffetz, and she damn well deserves the support. And taking that away, you know. Knocking off a big one like that in 2018 would mean something. The for-profit media would be forced to talk about it and talk about the backlash against the extremism of the Republican Party. And then, I'm sorry, yes, I'm a vindictive prick. I would love nothing better than to watch the comrade Kumquat's oral sphincter reflexively tighten as the other one does when he realizes that the impeachment hearings might just be starting.
Yes. And you know what? I will grill to that.
I'll grill to that. Amen. Hey, Todd, we got to get out of here, buddy.
Talk to you, man.
All right, man. Jump in on Friday on the front porch if you want to.
Okay.
All right. Later, man. And my apologies to Alma, who was going to meet the first-time caller challenge. She didn't get through, or I didn't see the phone ring. My bad. But anyway, hopefully we'll make up that little shortfall and just have $200 to raise tomorrow. We'll cross our fingers. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.